The question is this: what is it that has some of us find our way to the top of our game, to overcome adversity and challenges, resistance and self-sabotage, to rise from the ashes time and time again? What is it that has everyday people just like you and I act boldly in the name of their passions and live out their wildest dreams in this lifetime? That is the question, and this podcast has the answers. My name is Carrie McCauley, and this is Choose Unstoppable.
Hello, and welcome to Choose Unstoppable. My name is Carrie McCauley, and today, my friends, I have a treat for you. We are here with Mr. Matthew Corbin, and he is a certified health and life coach who helps executives restore balance without compromising their careers, relationships, or health. I can't wait to hear more about that. He's an eight-figure business owner and understands the demands of business and the stress of building something from the ground up. And as if that wasn't a big enough demonstration of discipline, Matthew is also a fifth degree black belt martial artist and practices meditation and yoga daily. Matthew, hello and welcome. And thanks so much for taking the time to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet. What I typically love to do is start things off with a little bit of backstory, because there's usually more to it than just the highlight reel. So if I could ask you just to share a little bit about how you got to where you are today, and then we'll get into some of the meat of what you do after that.
Yeah. So I'm a coach, and I've been a coach for 3 or 4 years now. And before that, I was a consultant, which is very similar. But 4 years ago, I had an incident that made me pivot and become a coach. And in a while, I'm going to say the difference between this and that and what happened to me exactly. So let me start from the beginning. I was born in Beirut, Lebanon, long time ago. And I remember the first 13 years of my life, I spent in shelters, hiding from bombs, because there was war in 1976, until I was like 13 years old, until I could escape and run away. And so for the first 13 years, I remember my childhood, which was fun. I mean, for a child, it was fun, you know. But I do remember my favorite game with my friends, and it was called Guess the Number. And we used to hide and say 80. No, that's 120. Oh, that's 110. And these were the calibers of the cannons that were shooting at us. And we were kids, and we knew how many miles, how many mile away was the cannon, and what's the caliber and everything. And for us as kids, it was fun. But we know that as we become adults, we are mostly affected by childhood programming. Mm. So at the age of 13, I was able to escape, and my parents sent me to France and to study in France, because in Beirut I was in French school and in the French part, and that's my accent and my first language, which is French. So I went to France to study there, and I was in school, so away from my parents. I didn't see them until I was like 18, and It was nice, good, and it programmed me somehow. So everything I had in my mind was, I need to work hard. I need to study hard. I cannot go back to this place. I cannot go back to war. I cannot go back to this. And once I'm 18 and I went to college, and I had one thing in my mind: I need to work hard. I need to have a family. I need to raise my kids away from everything else. Because I was already in the States. I came here. And I went to college here in the States. So I started working hard. And my first job, when I went to my interview, I remember my boss said, "Oh, you speak French, you speak Arabic, you speak English, and you know the culture of the Arab world. So we're sending you there." I was like, "What?" But I ran away from there. I don't want to be there. So I was assigned in Dubai, my first job, and I went to Dubai, and I started working like 17, 18 hours a day. And I thought I was a hero. And I used to go to my director and tell him, "Listen, I want more. And he used to search for any job that no human being can do and give it to me. And I thought I was a hero again. So just to fast forward, after working 16, 17 hours a day for more than 15 or 20 years, and I remember at one point the HR director called me, and she was a very nice lady, and she was very caring. She was like a mother to all of us. And she was like, son, you've been with us for 7 years and you haven't taken any day off. And I was like, yay. And I was expecting a bonus or something. And she was like, no, that's bad. I was like, no, that's good. Because, you know, we go back to childhood programming. This is the pressure, and this is the tension, and this is like you fight to stay alive, and you think when you grow up that it's okay to have tension, and you should have this. And if one day I don't have, like, I have a normal 8 or 9 hours work, I feel bad. I feel guilty. Like, I don't deserve this. But wait, I have a peaceful weekend. I don't deserve this. So anyways, fast forward. And then I'll go back again. So fast forward, my wife kept telling me, you need to go get yourself checked because you're painting and you become pale and you just fall and you became huge. I mean, you're a martial artist and now look at you. You look like a semi. You're like 400 pounds. Because I neglected my health. I neglected everything just for the sake of working and building an empire for my kids, because I don't want them to go and to live whatever I lived. And I thought it's okay. So anyways, one day I went to the doctor and I told him, and not because my wife told me go get checked, because back then I thought that asking for help is a weakness. And now I know it's not. And I coach around this. So I found the doctor. I said, listen, doc, do you know RoboCop? Can you install the RoboCop knees on my knees? Because I cannot stand up anymore. I'm so heavy. So can you do some tech, some miracle? So he started laughing. He said, let's do some tests. And he just put me through every test, maybe except pregnancy. So anyways, after I woke up, like, 5 or 6 hours, and I saw the doctor just on top of my head, and he had his hands stretched in front of my face and his fingers stretched, and he was like, can you see my fingers? I'm like, great, I need now another doctor thing. Yes. He was like, can you count? I said, yes, those are 5 fingers. Now, am I cleared? Can I leave? I'm okay. I'm awake from everything. And he was like, no, these are 5 months. You still have to live. And I was like, what? He said, yes, you have an extreme inflammation inside your organs. Your whole blood system is poisoned. All the organ, including your intestine, your spleen, your everything are not working, not functioning. And congratulations, you have five months to live. I heard you're very successful. You have lots of money. Go spend your money for the last 5 months. And it hit me. It hit me hard. And I tell you the truth, I was afraid for the first time in my life. I mean, I lived in war. I escaped death many times. I used to run between bullets, spotting snipers on rooftops. And nothing scared me but that moment. Because at that moment, I knew I had a family. I had kids. And I might not go back to see them. And all of these long hours I was working are for nothing. So I just remembered one sentence my martial arts sensei used to tell me, my martial arts instructor used to tell me. And he used to say, if you fall 6 times, just get up 7. And I never understood that sentence. And I always thought, what's with 6 and 7? And it doesn't matter how many times you fall, as long as you just pick up yourself and just carry on. So I looked at the doctor and said, what are my options? He said, 50-50, we can take the surgery. After the surgery, you might live for 5 hours, 5 days, nothing. Or you might live. I said, I'll take it. So anyways, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell my wife. I didn't tell anyone. I just called my lawyer. I just wrote my will. And I was ashamed of myself. I was ashamed of everything. I was afraid. I was in a dark tunnel. And I didn't see any light. And I called my lawyer. I wrote my will. And I went into the surgery. It was an 18-hour surgery. And I remember before closing my eyes, I didn't know if I'm going to open them again. But that second that went on like a year in slow-mo, I just looked up, prayed, and I said, "Dear God, I'm a believer, and I forgot you all of these years because I didn't know you, I didn't remember you, I didn't need you, and this is how we are. But forgive me, if I wake up, I'm gonna make things better. I'm gonna just pivot my life and do something with it." And I closed them. I opened my eyes 18 hours later. I stayed for like 15 days in the ICU, in the hospital, until I recovered. And then I came back home. For the first 8 months after surgery, I couldn't eat. So I was living on just IV and serum and stuff. I dropped from 400 pounds to 160. And I was lost. I didn't know what to do. I was out of my comfort zone. I was a consultant. I was consulting for huge business people, for government, for like big corporation. And I used to spend my days, my evening, either posing for some cover magazines or signing deals or bossing people. So now I'm in my room alone. So I called my partners. I had my company. I called my partners. I just liquidated everything. I said, "I don't want anything. Just take everything and give away to charities. I want to start over from scratch. But this time, I want to start right. I don't want to have like baggage or anything. I don't know how to do it with baggage, with everything. I don't want the temptation to go back to my old life, because I was having the temptation on a daily basis. This is what I do. And people were calling me, were saying, "We miss you, come back." And I didn't. And for 8 months, I didn't know what to do. And then my wife one day came into my room, and I was sitting in the corner and listening to my favorite music, listening to Pink Floyd. And my wife looked at me and said, "Remember how all of our friends, whenever they need anything, they come to you, they ask you?" I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Same for the family, same for everyone. They always come to you, they always ask you, you always help everyone. Remember how you're driving on the highway and you see a car on just stopped and you just pull over and go out in the snow and help them?" I was like, "Yeah, that's me. I mean, this is what I believe in." She said, "Maybe this is what you should do. Maybe you should help people and not by consulting and mergers and all of these things, maybe on a different level, more human level." And I knew it. I just went back to school. I got certified as a coach, and I started developing my own methods, testing them before going, because I realized that the best thing in the world is working with people. It's such a big responsibility. And it's such an amazing thing. I mean, I can't remember how many times I woke up and I was feeling bad. I was like, "I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired." And then I get a call from a client, and I mean, all my clients are my friends now. I get a call from one of them, and they go like, "Something could happen to me, and I'm happy," and it keeps me going. And it's like a ripple effect, and it's like a circle. We take and we give. So I started coaching, and first thing I thought of, there are a lot of people like me who are compromising their relationship, their health, their everything, just for the work, just for the sake of work and building career. A lot of people think that, okay, let's pause everything now and I still can do it, and later on when I retire, I can just do whatever I want. My dream is just to get an RV and tour the country. Well, no. Don't wait until you're retired. You can retire from the moment you are born if you have the right balance into your life. Like, you don't have to compromise your career, but you can have the right balance. And this is the core of my coaching. This is what I do now. I do it with passion, and for the last 4 or 5 years, I've helped over 100 people I know and I don't know to do this. Now, I promise you I'm going to go back to one story and to show you that there's always, I mean, sometimes we don't have to argue with everything. So one day I was in Dubai still, and this was like maybe 20 years ago. I was still in Dubai and my director calls me, and this was before I had my business. I used to work for one of these big firms, and my director calls me and he was like, we're having a big seminar in Beirut, Lebanon, and you're going to go there to lead this. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And he said, yes, you are. I said, no, you don't get it. It's something. I mean, I love Beirut, Lebanon. I was born there and it's a beautiful country, but I live such a big trauma and such I have something. I can't go back. You don't get it. You have to jump inside of me to understand the fear and the bad memories I have when I go there. It's enough for me just to look at the picture. He said, listen, see that you go there to lead this seminar or just pick up your bags and go home. I'm like, wow, okay, fine. I'm going. So I went there. It was a 3-day seminar. And on the last day, it just ended and I was just counting the seconds for the morning plane to just to go and to leave. And so I went to this hole in the wall coffee shop in the middle of nowhere in Beirut. And I sat there, I ordered my usual espresso. I had my book, I had my music, and I sat there, I started reading and counting the seconds. And here's a beautiful girl enters from the front door, and she sat on the other couch. And by the way, the whole coffee shop is just two couches. So, and she ordered her espresso, and she had her book and her headphones. And I looked at her, I smiled. I just scooched next to her and just nudged her. And she didn't even look at me. And she was like, I don't care. And then I nudged her again. And she was like, listen, even if you're Bill Gates, I don't care. Like, oh my God, you are still mean. And she looks at me and her big, beautiful eyes just light up. She was like, oh my God, is that you? I was like, yes, that's me. And she says, wait, isn't today your birthday? I was like, do you still remember my birthday? And that girl was my best friend from school. For the first 13 years of my life, we used to run together and hide under desks from cannons, from everything, and we used to play together. And I didn't see her since then, maybe. Wow. And today she's my wife. Oh. So I held her hand, I called my boss in Dubai, and I told him, can I stay for one more week in Beirut?
Oh, Matthew, my heart is exploding from this story. I'm barely keeping the water in my eyes. There is so much just beauty and heartbreak, and it's just so incredible what the human journey will provide us. Oh. When we think it's our darkest, sorry, I'm a little moved, but when we think it's our darkest, it can bring us the brightest of lights. So grateful for you sharing, like, all the way through, like, just sitting on the edge of my chair. I just want to recap the line, if you fall 6 times, get up 7. And just how even in your own story, you had to kind of face that fear of going back in order to get the biggest gift. Like, this idea of falling 6 times and getting up 7 is, you just never know when it's the time that you will get up that will bring you everything. And so I'm in awe of your courage, and just in awe of the way the world works to reward when we take such courageous acts, to reward us in such miraculous ways. That story is unbelievable. Like, just, it's beautiful. There are definitely people listening in to this who may not have the same story as you. They may not have dealt with war, or they may not have, had to escape or run. But there are people who are still being impacted by their childhood programming, as you referenced at the beginning. And there are people who are living this kind of default life that they've just, felt that they should keep going. What is a piece of advice you would have for them if they were at a point where they longed to recreate or redefine themselves, but just feel too afraid? I mean, you had a big health scare, obviously, which in the end, like, no disrespect whatsoever, but was quite the blessing. Even that, you think, is a tragic, horrific thing, and you wouldn't wish it on anybody. But then on the other side of that same coin, I wouldn't take that out of your story, because this wouldn't be happening right now.
Absolutely.
And so what would your advice be to someone who is just can't see the way to the recreation or the redefine, because you've got that old world, because you're so attached into those old ways? What would you say to someone?
That's an amazing question. I would ask everyone, I'd invite everyone to stop and to rethink, to try to discover their why, their real why, their purpose. And I'm gonna be honest with you, no one can do it alone.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried. I was a consultant for more than 20 years, and I was sitting in my room for over 8 months trying to discover it on my own, and I could not. We all need each other. This is why no one lives on an island alone. So I would invite everyone to just say, I need help. It takes real courage. It takes real strength to ask for help. And there is one for everyone to help. We should help each other. Mm. And I would invite everyone to search for their real why, to search for their purpose. And once they find their purpose, then they can carry on from there. It's either they pivot and redo it again, and it's never too late, or they're on the right track. Congratulations. Mm. But let's all stop for a while and get away from our childhood programming, from our society programming, from all the pressure. I mean, I can tell you, there are pressures everywhere. From the moment you step out of your home, you are expected to drive a certain car, to wear a certain brand, to behave in a certain manner, to say certain things, and people are tagged in a certain way. And at a certain point, we start acting in order to just meet these expectations of the society, of the people, of our childhood, of our parents, of everything. And in order for us to isolate ourselves from all of this and get to the pure of us, to the pure state of us, and discover what do we really need, we need help.
Mm.
And we get the real help, and then we discover our why. This is the essence. This is the starting point.
Oh, thank you so much, Matthew. I am so grateful that our paths have crossed today. I'm so grateful to share your story with the Choose Unstoppable audience, because we are just, you know, watching and seeking and hungry for those examples of people who have gone before to say, well, if he can do it, maybe I can too. And you have given us more than that today. Tell us a little bit about, if people want to learn more about you or how to work with you or how to just get some more information on you, where would we go? How will we find you?
The best way is through my website. I have everything on my website, so they can just contact me there, follow my social media, and I invite them to schedule the free clarity session with me. It's Matthew Corbin, my name, my last name, .com. So www.MatthewCorbin, Matthew double T, Corbin, KORBAN.com.
And I'll make sure to put that in the show notes for anyone who's listening in, for sure.
Yeah.
And I'll include the link to the session, the clarity session, because I think thank you for offering a free service so that people can at least have somewhere to start and to get a taste of what might very well be next for them.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. To everyone listening at home, we're going to have to leave Matthew. Again, I'm super grateful to you, Matthew. Thank you so much. And for all of those of you at home, until next week, choose unstoppable. I hope this episode filled you up with inspiration and you're feeling ready to turn that into big action for some explosive growth in your business. And if that's you, then I have a free training on how to build a wildly engaged audience, get hundreds of leads in a matter of days, and even create a wildly successful launch. You can watch it right now at carriemccauley.com/watch now. See the show notes for the link. And as always, thank you for tuning in. Your support means more than you could ever know. We'll see you on the next episode.